NASA's Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution mission has been orbiting Mars and studying the Martian atmosphere since 2014. With me today to tell us about NASA's MAVEN mission is NASA Goddard Space Flight Center's chief scientist, recipient of two NASA Outstanding Leadership Medals, and co-investigator of the Mars Global Surveyor, Dr. Jim Garvin. Dr. Garvin, thanks for joining us today and welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
NASA's MAVEN spacecraft has been orbiting Mars for more than a year now. What were the mission's primary objectives?
MAVEN is a mission all about seeing the invisible and measuring things that sometimes we don't think about. Its goal was to see how the Martian atmosphere, different from Earth, but no less intriguing, by the way, how it interacts with space, and in particular, how it's being lost to space over very long periods of time, because that is a key ingredient in whether Mars could have sustained a kind of habitability for a long period of time, the kind of environmental conditions that living things on Earth kind of like. And so Mars is a great control experiment, and hence MAVEN's measurements, because Mars, apparently, for reasons unknown to science at this point, lost an internal magnetic field early in its history. Earth, of course, still has its. So Mars' atmosphere is being subject to loss of molecules, of volume of gas to space in a very different way than Earth, and a profoundly interesting way, which could have a bearing on whether Mars ever could have retained and sustained long periods of environments that would have been favorable to life as we know it. So MAVEN's measuring the interactions of the solar wind with Mars and deep space weather, for that matter, and measuring them with incredible precision as it watches that atmosphere puff away into space, sort of a quarter of a pound an hour of material. And that's really a big part of the puzzle of why Mars today is not the warm, wet of Mars of the past.
As you just mentioned, we don't know how Mars lost its magnetic field. Are there any theories on how this may have happened?
Right now, we don't know how Mars lost its magnetic field, and it was a major discovery that there was even the fossil, if you will, signature of one that may have been almost as intense and massive as that of the Earth, which we enjoy and love now and helps keep us alive. And so we see that remnant field preserved in the crust from an instrument that flew to Mars in the late 90s on the Mars Global Surveyor, which carried a magnetometer built at NASA Goddard, and it see sort of the fossil fingerprints of it, and it apparently died out within the first billion years of Mars history, its record being preserved in the crust. And since then, the only magnetic field at Mars is that induced by the solar wind interacting with the atmosphere, producing a sort of a dynamic field, but not related to the interior of Mars. And the solar wind does that at objects like Mars and like Venus that do not have internal fields. So how Mars lost that field, basically, in the internal energy that spins up those fields is not known, but it's a fantastic problem in geophysics that we'd love to understand better.
Do we now have an idea how long ago Mars lost its magnetic field?
If Mars formed, as we believe, the other rocky planets around 4.6, 4.67 billion years ago, in about the first billion years, the internal field on Mars froze its record in the rocks that coated the plains of Mars, many places with neat names that we've now named, and then it shut down because we don't see it later in the history of Mars as best we know that history, which is incomplete and hence raises an issue that we really do need to measure rocks on Mars, both on Mars and back here on Earth, to see what the clocks are telling us about the ages of the different surfaces. And that requires great precision and something that is best done with samples brought back to Earth.
Mars' atmosphere is much thinner than it was in the past. Compared to the density of Earth's atmosphere, what's Mars' atmosphere like, and how has it affected the presence of liquid water on the surface?
Earth's atmosphere, pressure and density and composition, nitrogen, oxygen, and trace gases, is very conducive to many good things, including the systems of life and biology that we know and love, including ourselves. It's a big atmosphere. Its surface pressure is about 1,000 millibars of those gases. On Mars, the surface pressure on a typical place on Mars is 5 to 6 millibars. So that's 1/200th of the Earth. And very rarefied, if you will. And in fact, because it's so rarefied, it behaves very differently in terms of its physics. And so your feet could be warm and your head freezing on Mars with an incredible gradient, only at the scale of, you know, 2 to 3 meters. Whereas on Earth, of course, there's different gradients because of big, dense atmosphere. So we really want to get to know the Mars atmosphere. It's made of carbon dioxide. It presently is so rarefied, liquid water, this magic stuff that we need to do many things, which carves river valleys and canyons and all kinds of other stuff and helps sustain life, also shields out the nasty space radiation that's out there beyond the magnetic field of Earth. Liquid water on Mars is not stable in terms of physics and chemistry at such low pressures and temperatures. It exists in a gas and solid state only. So unless that atmospheric pressure pumps up by a factor of about 2 or 3, liquid water just doesn't want to stay in that state. And so any that might trickle out is going to quickly want to evolve and change its state to be a solid or a gas. And so that's why we really want to understand the history of the Martian atmosphere, because we know in the past Mars sustained persistent bodies of liquid water like those we've been reading the record of in the rocks in Gale Crater with the Curiosity rover. MAVEN's job is to measure, and has been measuring, how the atmosphere interacts with the solar wind today and is being lost to space and other photochemical reactions, but also how it may have worked integrated back in time 3-4 billion years ago when Mars was warmer and wetter and really an exciting place to be. And that's that, if you will, that time machine story is what MAVEN's all about.
From other Mars missions, we now know that water exists below the surface of Mars. Is it possible that life may presently exist below the surface?
We really don't know whether Mars is alive or ever could have been. We know it had habitable environments. The Curiosity rover has demonstrated that with its last 1,100 plus days of observations, as have other missions, including our Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and Phoenix lander. So we're confident there were habitable environments, as that definition goes, in the past on Mars, now recorded in the geological records. We don't know whether those conditions at those times on Mars would ever harbored anything that we would call life. The Curiosity rover's instrument, SAM, has detected organic molecules on Mars that we really do believe are from Mars. How they were made, in some sense, we don't understand, even with the exquisite instruments we have on Mars on Curiosity. So we have more work to do. Right now, the big question we really would like to get to know is, you know, could there ever have been signs of ancient life on Mars if such life existed? And where would we look? The modern life question is fascinating and, of course, critical if human beings are going to go to Mars and explore and live and work, do great stuff there, which would be unbelievably awesome. But the bigger question is about the ancient life, because that could be the thing that helps point us to how modern life could have worked on Mars, could be working on Mars. So we need to get to know the past to know the present on Mars, because the present may be very, very complicated and elusive.
How will MAVEN's findings help us with future Mars exploration missions?
Well, MAVEN is opening our eyes to the way the upper atmosphere of Mars is working with exquisite detail, all these physical and chemical interactions, what's being lost to space, playing that tape backwards in time, what could have caused those losses in space to have changed. We watched what happens when a solar flare, a coronal mass ejection, flies from the sun and interacts with the Martian atmosphere back in March. MAVEN measured those interactions for the first time. We saw an acceleration of loss during that period, and then a restabilization. So MAVEN gives us the now, the here, allows us to look at single events and project them back in time and say, okay, 3 billion years ago or so, Mars was warm, wet, and fuzzy with a different atmosphere, bigger, we think, and perhaps more capable of sustaining liquid water. And we believe it did, and that may have allowed it to have the possibilities for this magic stuff called life. So MAVEN's measurements are critical to saying, could that have happened? And what processes could have led Mars to slowly lose some of that atmosphere and hence not allow for stable liquid water as a condition to help protect life, even if there were no magnetic field? So MAVEN's critical. I mean, it may seem like an esoteric mission, but we've known we've needed these measurements since the late 70s after we landed Viking on Mars in our first quest to look for signs of life.
In just a few days, in fact, by the time this interview airs, MAVEN will have completed its primary mission.
Yes, MAVEN's primary mission, as defined by NASA regulations when we complete these missions, is over on November 16th. Ironically, tomorrow is the anniversary of the first orbiter ever to orbit another planet, Mariner 9, which the United States sent to Mars in 1971. MAVEN, ironically, is concluding just about its primary science mission about the same day, some 40 years later. But we will extend the MAVEN mission with permission from, of course, the senior leaders of NASA. We hope for another cycle of observations so we are able to understand better the short-term versus longer-term variations in how Mars is interacting with the solar wind. So that's what we do. We have a primary mission. We fund. We do the work. Amazing set of research papers were published just a few days ago by Bruce Joukowsky and his team. But now we have an extended mission, more people involved. And with good fortune and, you know, continued favorable funding decisions by our leaders at NASA, the MAVEN mission could extend for another cycle, a Mars year of 687 days. And that would be our hope, and possibly even further if it's still healthy. That's what our Mars missions have done in the past. For very low investment, they extend the amazing science that's been done.
MAVEN is a very low-cost mission. How do dollars spent on the mission equate to money spent on Earth?
The mission total cost to the American taxpayer is about what it would cost a reasonable scale major film to be made by the movie industry. And so for the cost of a film, and they're very pleasurable and we all enjoy them, we can fly a mission to Mars to understand what it's going to take to really be there. In fact, MAVEN would, in some ways, pave the way for the kind of visualization of how it might be when people go to Mars someday, as was in the film The Martian, depicted recently with people like Matt Damon, because everything about how we will learn to live and work on Mars will require understanding in a predictive fashion how the atmosphere works, how the weather works, how dust storms work, what we can look for, how we can live there, and MAVEN's part of that puzzle.
What's next on the horizon, or maybe I should say the Martian horizon in space exploration?
Well, we're readying a mission called InSight to launch to Mars this coming March. It is a mission all about reading the geophysical signatures of the inside of Mars. We've been measuring the outside of Mars with MAVEN and of course, with the rocks we see with Curiosity and also the local atmosphere as it drives. But this is a mission to look inside Mars in the way in which seismic energy tells us about its structure and to read its basic heat flow parameters, take its pulse. And that will tell us how Mars has gotten the crust it has today. Very important parameter, critical for understanding the Earth and Moon. So we're doing it for Mars. This was a competitively selected mission whose principal investigator is another gentleman whose name is Bruce, in this case, Bruce Bannert, at our Jet Propulsion Lab. That will launch in March and operate on the surface of Mars for at least a Martian year, listening in to the interior. And then our next big mission is in 2020, when NASA will launch the Mars 2020 rover, not unlike Curiosity, but with different instruments, including an instrument that paves the way for humans to go to Mars, the Mars 2020 rover being developed at Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. This mission is to prepare the way for robotic sample return. It will measure aspects of rocks and soils, looking for potential biosignatures, sort of chemical fossils, or whatever they would be, to be honest, and record them and collect them in little tubes, we call them cache tubes, and leave them to be retrieved and returned to Earth at a future time. And this is the first step toward the Mars sample return concept, which has been a very, very high priority for NASA for Mars since around 1980.
The Curiosity rover has been doing great science on the surface of Mars and Gale Crater since 2012. What has Curiosity discovered that will benefit the 2020 rover mission?
Well, Curiosity has demonstrated that there were environments conducive and favorable to life in the Martian past, and it's also detected organic molecules from sources unknown, but still Martian organic molecules, heavy carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen kind of molecules. We've done that. We're continuing to look for further signs, and we're getting very good measurements now as Curiosity continues, and fascinating ones. I think they will be reported in the spring. But this next rover has new instruments that can measure new things faster so that we can pick samples, little cored tubes in rocks, to be stored away to later be returned to Earth for use in Earth laboratories where we can pick them apart femtomole by femtomole, and that's a little tiny bit of stuff, basically. And we can do that in laboratories across the world as we do the lunar samples and meteorites. And so while we can do a lot on Mars with instruments as on Curiosity and as on the Mars 20 rover, we can't do the kind of fine-scale stuff that we need people in the loop with specialty instruments that are big, huge laboratory instruments to do here on Earth. So we need to bring the goodies back to Earth, and we need to find the right stuff, and Mars 20 is our first step to attempt to do so. And those samples will be the gift that kind of keeps giving for the kids of today as they explore Mars, as we also get ready to send people.
Is there a mission plan to gather these rocks, these samples, and the cash back and bring them back to the Earth?
Well, the way NASA budget cycles work, and, you know, appropriately by the people that authorize the budgets for us, members of Congress, is that we only have funding horizons out a short while. So this mission is funded, Mars 20, to operate in the early 20s. The follow-on missions are as yet still in planning and not funded in the present budgets that have been approved by Congress. We will hope that the future leaders of this country would like to continue the United States leadership in the scientific frontier that is Mars. Sample return is one of the key ingredients, you know, kind of like giant telescopes or Earth orbiting missions to study our home planet, that presents a leadership position in scientific exploration. And so we hope that, you know, would be approved. But we don't know. That's in the hands of the people and what people want to fund through their congressional representatives. And I think bringing samples of Mars as legacy for understanding whether life could exist off planet is a great thing to do, and fantastic technologies to do it cost effectively and also to prepare the way for people, but whether that can happen or not is really not in the call of us scientists. It's in the hands of the public and the people that represent all of us.
My guess is that the plans for a sample return mission will be decided in the next decadal, when the next 10 years of space exploration will be decided. Is that correct?
Right. The way it works, and this is a great question, NASA receives guiding recommendations for science priorities from 10-year-long surveys, decadal surveys, led by the National Academy of Sciences and by large numbers of inputs from the community. We solicit those on a rotating cycle for planetary exploration, Earth science, astrophysical sciences, and heliophysics study of the sun. And so the last planetary decadal said the number one priority in missions of a larger price class was to cache samples that could provide inputs and understanding to the possibility of past life on Mars. The astrobiological prioritization. And that was the first step in what we think might be a two-mission set to actually collect those samples and bring them back to Earth. But this is very complicated technology, kind of like human missions without the people, to fly to Mars, land on Mars, collect samples, store them safely, document them exquisitely. So when we find something, we know it happened here for this reason in these rocks. And then, separate mission, land, fetch those materials in the cache tubes. They're like little metallic test tubes that are all specially sealed to protect planet Earth, and then blast them into orbit to be rendezvoused with another spacecraft to be carried back safely to the Earth-Moon system, and then to appropriately enter the Earth system with all the right safety checks so they can be gathered on the surface of the Earth and sent to laboratories and very special handling procedures like we use for very dangerous microbes, just in case. So we have a long chain of things we want to do correctly to keep our eyes wide open into what Mars could present, but also to get to know Mars. And so those are multiple missions. They're complicated, kind of like, you know, like the missions that we used to carry the people to the moon back in the 60s. We have to get to know how to break them up into the right bite-sized pieces, and that's how sample return, we believe, can be done most cost-effectively with robotic mission architectures.
As I've said in other broadcasts, these are very exciting times in space exploration. There are plans for storing rock and soil samples on Mars and then bringing them back to the Earth at a later date. Other Mars missions, including MAVEN, are step-by-step bringing us closer to the reality of landing a human on Mars, a very special time in the history of space exploration.
Absolutely. In fact, I think sometimes we take for granted how far we've come. The Mars that many of us grew up with, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, was a cold, sterile, dry, foreboding place. And now it's a place with all these prospects of ancient, warm, wet, even subsurface possibilities that could be incredible. We don't know about those, but there are possibilities. So the Mars of today was a water planet, is a water planet. The water's hidden a bit. And whether it ever was a refuge for life, as we understand it, is still an unbelievably powerful question. And if we knew Mars had its own, if you will, genesis, so to speak, you know, scientifically, then wouldn't that be cool that we're not alone in this little neighborhood of our solar system? And that opens the prospects for planets around nearby suns, so-called exoplanets, to have other possibilities for this magic stuff we call life. So I don't think we've seen anything yet.
Dr. Garvin, thanks for joining us today to discuss not only the amazing science that the MAVEN mission is doing, but also the other past, present, and future NASA Mars missions. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cosmic Perspective Radio is an Andy Panaros production.
Seconds in counting, guidance internal, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, we have ignition sequence start, engines on, 5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are willing to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Okay, engine stop. ATA at a descent. Hold control both auto descent and command override off. Engine arm on. 413 is in.
We're trying to get down, Eagle.
Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.